The poet and critic Dana Gioia would probably agree. He is also the outgoing chairman of the National Endowment for the Arts, leaving his post now after 6 years. I wanted to get his sense of where the arts in America are headed at this gigantic moment of change and flux. To run the NEA, you've got to be good at making do with what you can get. The annual budget is not even $150 million. That's about 3 or 4 hours of economic stimulus or a day and a half of the war in Iraq. I asked Chairman Gioia what single achievement he was proudest of.
I have to say that the big read is the one I take the greatest pride in because it addresses the most terrifying cultural trend in the United States, which has been a quarter of a century of constant decline in American reading and more lately in reading ability. And we're going to be releasing some numbers that are going to be amazing. The decline in reading has been reversed for the first time in, you know, recorded history.
Really? And what a good time to have some remarkable good news.
It's, you know, it's we need good news on the cultural front. And we need especially to believe, and this is proof, that cultural decline is not inevitable.
And is there some kind of new set of challenges that the NEA can now take on?
Well, there's many things that I wish I might have done.
Yeah.
You know, of all these great programs that we did in the NEA over the last 6 years, we did virtually nothing for elementary school. You've got, you know, 40 million kids who have had arts education taken out of their curriculum. That has not merely cultural consequences, but economic consequences. The second thing, and once again, we made some progress here, but it's just a first step, is cultural diplomacy. The United States cannot speak to the rest of the world merely, you know, through money, politics, and military. There are about 180 nations in the world, and right now, most of them have no cultural exchange with the United States.
Well, and as one looks back at, you know, our great foreign policy success of our lifetimes, which is to say the Cold War, clearly, that was part of what we did right in the 50s and 60s and 70s.
Absolutely. You know, in retrospect, you know, Eisenhower, who had seen the worst of human behavior in World War II, was the person who said that, you know, we needed what he called soft power. He was the one that created cultural exchange on a broad level for the first time in American history. And in retrospect, that was so smart.
So we have this new president coming in. And I wondered, for instance, when you saw, as I presume you did, the news photo of President-elect Obama carrying a book of poetry by Derek Walcott, how did that feel as a poet?
Well, I think, it's a fine thing when a person in the White House reads poetry. I mean, we've had some great poetry fans in the White House, Abraham Lincoln, you know, Theodore Roosevelt, John Kennedy. You know, one wants a president who is engaged with culture as well as with business and politics.
And what are you expecting from a President Obama, culture-wise?
Well, I'm expecting good things, not the least of which because he quoted me in his platform. So, you know, I feel that my vision of what the, you know, federal cultural policy should be in his, you know, aren't far apart. I think we've created a very strong base at the NEA, and I think that there's enormous opportunity to build on it.
And people have said, and people are saying, oh, well, you know, in order to show that this federal government and this president really cares about culture, he should make a cabinet-level culture ministry, if you will, Secretary of Culture. What do you feel about that?
Well, you know, I don't want to, you know, being myself a political figure at the moment, I think it's inappropriate for me to comment on what might be legislative or executive changes. In fact, you know, legally, I've got to be very careful in doing that. I will say this, is that when both the Kennedy and the Johnson administrations began to frame what later became the National Endowment for the Arts, the National Endowment for the Humanities, et cetera, they originally looked at a cabinet-level position, and they walked away from it because they felt, I think quite rightly, that it would politicize the job. You know, I do, you know, not think it's an advantage necessarily for the NEA, which is an independent federal agency. I mean, we are able to operate very independently from the political system. to be part of a huge cabinet bureaucracy.
Uh-huh.
I also worry that a culture position at a cabinet level might easily become a Hollywood and video game trade office.
Yeah.
And so I feel without any qualification that the National Endowment for the Arts has an enormous advantage by being independent.
And slightly off the radar and out of the limelight, you're suggesting.
Yeah. And if I have a problem, I can go and talk directly to a senator. I can talk directly to the president. I can talk directly to a member of Congress. If I were part of a cabinet department, I would not be able to do that.
There has been a lot of talk about the inauguration poet, Elizabeth Alexander, who is writing a poem that she'll read on January 20th for this new beginning. I wondered if a poem is in order for the other end of things, for the end of this administration after 8 years.
Well, I would not presume to pick a poem for the president. You know, I think that that would be something that he should pick for himself. But the funny thing is, if you're in Washington right now, you know, all these people are losing their jobs or about to start new jobs, and you realize how Shakespearean Washington is. I mean, you have these great rises to power and these falls. And there's a passage in Shakespeare, Cardinal Wolsey's speech from Henry VI, mm-hmm. Which is so apropos. And I won't read the whole thing, but I'll just read a few lines from it. It goes, "Farewell, a long farewell to all my greatness. This is the state of man. Today he puts forth the tender leaves of hope. Tomorrow blossoms and bears his blushing honors thick upon him. The third day comes a frost, a killing frost, and when he thinks, good, easy man, fully, surely his greatness is a ripening, nips his root, and then he falls as I do. Oh, how wretched is the poor man that hangs on princes' favors! There is betwixt that smile we would aspire to, that sweet aspect of princes and their ruin, more pangs and fears than wars or women have. And when he falls like Lucifer, never to hope again."
That is Dana Gioia reading from Henry VI by Shakespeare. What is it going to be like for you to have your days and nights free to, instead of counting senators and congressmen and courting them, to write poetry again?
It will be a great pleasure to leave political life. You know, I've taken this job very seriously because I think it's so important that the United States have a thriving arts agency. But, you know, I've traveled every week for 7 years, and for 6 years, and I work practically every day of the week. And so it'll be nice to discover my inner life again. And, you know, I'm taking a half-time job at the Aspen Institute to work on their arts programs. And I hope to return and write a few poems.
Well, congratulations and welcome those poems. Dana Gioia, thank you very much.
Oh, it's been my pleasure.
Later this month, Dana Gioia starts writing that poetry and begins his half-time position directing the program in the arts at the Aspen Institute. Coming up, artists try to set the agenda for Obama's first 100 days.
I'd love to see the Works Project Administration funded by Congress that will help employ millions of people.
That and a lot more recommendations for the new president just ahead in Studio 360 from PRI, Public Radio International, and WNYC. Stay with us.